Thank you, Stephen. If you would stand for the reading of God's word. This morning we'll be reading from the book of Isaiah, chapter 61, verses 1 through 3. The Spirit of the Lord God is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives and freedom to the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of our God's vengeance, to comfort all who mourn, to provide for those who mourn in Zion, to give them a crown of beauty instead of ashes, festive oil instead of mourning, and splendid clothes instead of despair. And they will be called righteous trees, planted by the Lord to glorify him. May the Lord add his blessing to the reading of his word. Children are released to children's church. And I believe Phil is coming up for introductions of our guest speakers.
Jana Ray Reed was the fourth child of Mama and Papa Ray, who lived on a farm in southwest Ohio. Jana had a challenging childhood. She had many health issues, too difficult for me to try to explain. But over the course of her young life, God was with her and watched over her and protected her and kept her. Jana went to high school in Versailles, Ohio, and she graduated from there with Doug Reed, who is our guest speaker today. Doug and Jana married very young. Doug was in the Army and was stationed in Alaska. And shortly after their wedding, Jana packed up and drove to Alaska to be with her husband. That would have been in the middle 1980s. Faye and I had the great privilege of serving our country with a tour of duty in Alaska also. We traveled there in 1990, after they had already been there several years. And we met them in their home one evening and got to celebrate the joy of people who are significantly younger than we are, 15 years at least, 14, 15, something like that. It's always a great joy to be with and fellowship with not only members who serve in the armed forces together with you, but who serve the God that we love. And so at that time, as I recall, they had three children, and we had five. Number six was still to come while we were there in Alaska. In any case, that was my first encounter with Doug and Jaina. A number of years later, after we retired, they ended up back in Ohio in the later 90s, and they visited us in our home out west of Crestline, because the occasion was, I believe, the graduation of she and our nephew, Matthew Ray. And that was a special time, too. By that time, she was, I think you said, pregnant with your sixth or seventh. Sixth. But there was still another to come. And so that was a time of great joy and celebration because we had all these children. And I know that her parents and my parents were thrilled. So Jaina has two sisters and an older brother who happens to be my brother-in-law. That's why I'm here, I guess. Doug is one of those guys. Well, let me, before I jump into that, I think it's pretty exciting that today we can not only celebrate Disability Sundays, but in 10 days, our nation will celebrate Veterans Day. You will see that Doug is an excellent representative and has understanding of both those things. Doug was always a go-getter. Like I said, he graduated from Versailles High School and joined the Army early and was full of life. What Faye and I remember of him in Alaska was he was very excited about his work. He loved to jump out of airplanes. He's a para guy, you know. Doesn't believe in staying in the plane. Somebody's got to get out and go do something. And he has also, over the course of his life, and I'm sure I won't give you a lot of detail because I'm sure you'll hear a lot about it as he shares. He is a first responder to the nth degree. He's been a firefighter, a policeman. He's done all the things that we love and respect about our first responders. A paramedic, among others. And so Doug is going to come and share about his experience. As a man of faith who went through a testing and a trial that none of us would ever want to have or experience. And so Doug, we thank you for your service. We thank you for being here with us today. And I think without ado, why don't you and Jaina just come and share your story.
Thank you, Phil. Honestly, and I saw this on a church kiosk one day, and I thought it made a lot of sense to me. And that is, COVID is a bad thing, and I agree with that. But like the Apostle Paul, I'm very happy we're on the road to Damascus. Damascus, anyhow. What? First of all, unlike your pastor, I'm not a professional speaker, nor is my wife. And long story short, when we were first going through this injury stuff, we agreed that we would give all glory and thanks to God. Because if he wasn't holding me in his arms the day I was injured, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be here to meet you, to talk to you, to share with you, to call you my friends and fellow believers in Christ. And that is well worth it to me. So first of all, I always have to start out with this because it makes the most sense to me. Thank you for inviting us to share with you. It is an honor and a complete privilege that we come here to beautiful Galleon, Ohio, and share with you. But long story short, I have to assure you all, we don't have it all together. Just because we're invited to speak to you doesn't mean, ooh, they're great, because we're not. God is great, and through him, we get along. And to just get into it, things aren't always okay. I mean, sometimes, pardon the expression, but sometimes life just sucks. Just kind of the way it is. Now, on the way here this morning, I was kind of rubbing my chin. I discovered that in my scar right there, I forgot to get close enough with the razor. I had a little whisker sticking. I was like, I don't know it's supposed to be there. I can't rock a beautiful goatee like Ryan over here. I don't have the ability. Plus, it was just never in me not to shave every day. So, anyhow, my drill sergeant made sure of that. But it's the way it is. It's a little challenge. And I guess if I were to title my talk to you today, it would be being an overcomer. We overcome a lot of things that, just in life. And life isn't always, like I said, it's not always easy. Sometimes you go out to start the car, you turn the key, and you hear that clicking sound. I don't know if you've ever experienced it. I drove some gems in my life. Most of them didn't start half the time. So I learned a lot about batteries and starter systems and all that. But so you just deal with it. And that is going to be my overall message to you, is that things pop up. Everybody has issues at times. Little things, sometimes bigger things. I get it. But it's not anything God can't handle. So, more of my little stuff. First of all, how did I get to this point? To have this beautiful jaw? And I'm pretty sure I was exercising my freedom of use of the middle finger on my right hand often, especially driving in traffic. I always tell people they were number one the way they were driving. And I really don't think God liked that too much. So part of my injuries involved a knuckle that was so torn up that the doctors didn't see fit to keep my finger, so they took it off. Now all I can do is tell people they're number three. So they can't be number one when they're driving, they've got to be number three, I guess. But how I got here, we were deployed, I volunteered to go, believe it or not. I was a recruiter for the Army National Guard for a bunch of years, and heard about these missions that were coming up to go be combat advisors to the Afghan National Army. in the overall idea of if we teach them how to take care of themselves or fight their wars, we don't have to go do it. So I volunteered for an advisor team. I'd had, I don't know how many years, 13, 14 years in recruiting, and I'd had my fill. I'm pretty sure most of my youngins that I was working with, my recruits, had their fill in me too. And that's okay. But I volunteered for this team. We were sent to Kansas for 9 weeks so they could teach us how to mentor troops. Hungarians, well, I'm sorry, Afghan National Army folks. But we weren't going to go do the mission without Hungarians. Or Hungary country. Back in the day, the National Guard was basically asked to mentor other countries in the former Soviet bloc on how to be better warriors, I guess, for lack of a better language or term. And the two countries that the State of Ohio National Guard picked up, I believe, were Bosnia and Hungary. So when Hungary got the mission from NATO, going to Afghanistan and do this combat advisor thing, they said, we'll go, but we're not going to go without our Ohio National Guard counterparts. So 28 Hungarian military folks and 28 Ohio National Guardsmen made this 56-man advisor team. And yeah, it was man. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be sexist. It's just that when you pick infantry, and at the time, females weren't allowed the infantry, and all the other rules that sometimes are there, sometimes aren't, it ended up being all male, both Ohio Guard and Hungarian, so it's a 56-man team. So we went into Afghanistan, we were doing our thing, going out on patrols, on missions, with our Hungarian and Afghanistan, I don't know, whatever that word is, Afghan National Army counterparts, and we were patrolling to try to keep territory and stuff away from people that didn't like us too much. Didn't like us all being there. Anyhow, on one of our missions, I have a rabbit hole yet.
You're doing great.
She's my butt kicker for when I get off track like now. So anyhow, although she didn't kick me, which is good. We're out on mission, and our team was on this patrol. We went in to talk to one of the senior leaders in Afghanistan. For whatever reason, they're set up kind of like we remember the old John Wayne westerns. Indian tribes and things like that. Native American tribes would be the politically correct way to say it. But in those native tribes, they had chiefs. And the chiefs kind of told the others, this is the way it's going to be, and that's the way it was. Afghanistan kind of operates in the same way. So they were mad about something. It was either pay cut, not enough food, whatever it was. The Afghan civilians were rioting, burning tires in the street, just pretty much kind of like Antifa. But anyhow, I'm not going to talk politics too much. But they were rioting, or the BLM folks, whatever they were, and tearing things up just because they weren't happy about something. Whatever that something is, it was just the way it is. So they asked our colonel to go in and talk to their tribal leader, whatever his name was, and settle things down. So we did that. We went into this village where their leader was, and our colonel went in and talked to him. Things settled down. And on the way out, we're on a gravel, basically a driveway. Now, your driveway is beautiful. It's paved and everything. We were on a gravel road. Around here, farmers, we call them lanes. Trails, that was the road in and out of this village. Our counterparts, the Afghans, were on foot. They didn't have the Humvees, they didn't have the up-armored vehicles or anything else. They were walking. Our colonel said, I'll put it as nice as I can, that ain't right. Had a lot to do with Barbara Streisand's initials, but anyhow. He said, we're riding, they're walking, that's not right. So we got out of our trucks and we were walking out with them, using our trucks for cover with machine guns and grenade launchers and all the fun toys the Army has. And on the way out, we got to a certain point that we were in their crosshairs. They set up an ambush, and they executed the ambush. In other words, they started shooting. Like we're taught in the Army, the best ambush is when you throw everything you have at them to kill the most of them that you can. And that's what they did to us. So we're taking rifle fire, machine gun fire. They didn't have grenade launchers. I feel sorry for them. Anyhow, they didn't have them. I'm happy for us. It's too bad for them. And one of the things they did have they used as grenades was RPGs, a rocket-propelled grenade. That is a, for those of you that don't know, I'm going to assume you all don't know, and I'm going to explain it. That is a warhead mounted on a launcher. It was made to kill tanks. And we had Humvees with armor on them, not really a lot of armor, but they were up armored, stop bullets, small arm fire. So they shot this grenade, rocket-propelled grenade at us. Being rocket-propelled, I don't have my props. Anyhow, the shape of a warhead is like two funnels, you know, a funnel you put oil in your car with, kind of round one end and went down to the small end. The warhead is shaped like that. And one end is plastic explosives, and the other end's a detonator. Out the back of that is a long stick that's got propellant in it, and that's what makes it rocket propelled. They shot this thing at us, and it was bouncing down the road on this gravel road like a rock skips on water. It was bouncing along. It stopped bouncing. It stopped bouncing when it hit me, hit my body armor. It bounced off the road, hit my body armor, went straight up toward my jaw, and knocked out all the teeth on the right side of my face. And cut my hand, stinking thing. So that happened because during this ambush, I was the senior non-commissioned officer of the group. My captain, Matt France, Major Matt now, was the leader of our little team. So I moved over to get his orders. Sir, what do you want me to tell these guys to do? You give the order, I'll make sure it's executed. Everybody will be happy. I went over to where he was. He's a smart guy. He was in a ditch, a drainage ditch, behind cover. He wasn't going to get hit. I'm on the road, so I took a knee. I figured, hey, that's safe. You know, bullets fly high. Anyhow, they don't fly that high. But I took a knee on this gravel road, and I was asking what to do, what he wanted me to do. It was at that time I got hit. So the only thing he says he remembers, the helmet fell off my head and was bouncing across the ground or whatever. Well, I didn't have no chin left. I mean, it makes sense if you actually think about it. You don't have a chin. Chin straps don't work without chins. The whole chin. I still had half a chin. But anyhow, so it wasn't working so good. The helmet fell off, went across the road. He reached out to try to grab me and drag me to cover. Couldn't quite reach me. All he said he remembers is our little fingertips touching, which is a bad feeling if you're him. Me, I don't remember any of it. Then they used one of our Humvees as rolling cover, and they rolled up and put the Humvee between me, us, and those shooting at us. Our team medic, his name is Ty Henry. Ty assessed my injuries and said, this isn't good. I'm sure he had a few expletives deleted, but he said, this isn't good. And because of keeping my airway open, he didn't want that to get compromised. They had no place to put me. We don't have ambulances like we have around here. All we had was these Humvees that had a lot of ammo, a lot of water and things in the back end of it. So there was no place to put me. They couldn't open the door and stick me in on the seat because my head would fall forward and no airway. And I don't know about you, but I like to breathe. So in order to get me out to exfiltrate that kill zone, they lifted me up on top of the hood of a Humvee. And in order to keep me on this Humvee, because I guess I wasn't real happy about getting hit in the head. I'm not real sure about all this, but brain injuries, head trauma can cause somebody to get combative. And I was fighting Ty. I didn't get off, you know, all this kind of stuff. I'm not sure what I was saying. I don't remember anything. So he was, at one point in his career, a wrestler at Ohio State. So he pinned me to the hood of that truck. And I think we have a photo somewhere along the lines that's going to show him on top of me going into the area where our field hospital was. Way back in the day, it called it a MASH unit. I don't know if some of you are old enough, some of you aren't. There was a TV show on through the 70s called MASH. That stood for Mobile Army Surgical Hospital. God loved the Army. I hope he does. But they keep changing all their acronyms to keep people like me confused. So they changed it from MASH to FAST team. That stands for Forward Area Surgical Team. It's the same thing, except it's not a hospital. When they're done operating on you, they take you somewhere. So we had a FAST team that did the surgery stuff, got me, well, another long story short. In the area of Afghanistan that we were in, it was technically under German control, German military. The German people didn't want, wasn't being real nice to their chancellor about why our German soldiers are in Afghanistan. Why are we spending money to help them, is what they were saying. So it was at night, they were trying to fly me out. The German military wouldn't send a helicopter to take me off to the next spot. They just refused to fly. As it worked out, myself and another member of our team, his name is Michael Burris, his nickname is Mickey, not the mouse, but anyhow, Mickey. So Mickey and I would go to that Special Forces team that was on the same post as we was, and we would get nightly briefings. They would do their briefings for their own intel, legends, intel. And we would sit in on that just to kind of learn the shape of the area. And because of that, we kind of befriended them. They befriended us. They kind of said, yeah, you know, you're the peons. We're Special Forces. We'll help take care of you. It worked in our favor because I don't know if it was Mickey or our colonel. Either way, somebody went and talked to the ASF guys and said, the Germans won't fly them out. Special Forces guys said, well, we've got our own helicopters. We'll fly them out. So they requested one of their helicopters. They came in at night. Picked me up from the Ford area, the FAST area, and flew me to Bagram Air Force Base Afghanistan. And from there, they put me on a plane, flew me to Germany. And from there, they called my wife and told her how I was going to die and be a whatever. I don't want to use the wrong word. Maybe in a vegetative state, let's put it that way. And that she should plan on long-term health care for me because I wasn't going to be like I was. So anyhow, at this point, it's probably about time I should shut up. But I had challenges, I had things to overcome. But we'll go back to what I think is the best description of what happened. I think right at that time, excuse me, Satan said, I'm going to kill this guy. I'm going to take him away. We're not going to let him have a life. See his kids, go back to his wife. All the promises he made before he left, I'm not going to let him keep those promises. And Jesus said, you ain't taking them. Feedback. So anyhow, he grabbed me. Jesus held me. Satan tried to rip me out of Jesus' hands. I don't know if you've ever pulled anything away from something, but the more leverage that you can grip on, the easier it is to pull. So I think my jaw was good leverage. I think that's how it got taken away, personally. And I think Satan had one slimy hand on my jaw and the other hand on my finger. And it's missing now, part of it. But Jesus didn't let him take me. Jesus said, I've got work for you. You're going to go back and share your story with folks and let them know that, yeah, sometimes things don't go the way we want it. But it's just a second in life. It's just a bat of an eye to God. We have to be able to overcome these little glitches in order to keep living our lives. So whenever you have one of those little issues, whatever it is, maybe it's getting up to go to church on Sunday. Maybe it's getting dressed in the right clothes to go to church on Sunday. Maybe it's, I just wore that shirt yesterday. It has a bit of a funk to it. Whatever the thing is, it's just a little thing. It's not anything that can't be overcome. And if you keep at it, I think we used to have, our kids used to watch a cartoon when we were growing up. They were growing up. We were supposed to have already been grown up. Anyhow, long story short, it was a Mickey Mouse thing. And he, I don't know, there's a little jingle about having stick-to-itiveness. I don't remember the whole thing, but anyhow, you got to just stick to it until you get things done. Okay, I'm going to shut up and give you to the smart one of the group, which is my wife, Jana. And she'll kind of fill in the gaps and maybe sound halfway intelligent. Okay.
I don't know. I guess we'll see here.
My wife, Jana, thank you very much.
Don't go anywhere.
See? Come on.
Remember what we said, we're not professional speakers, so who knows what you're going to get today. But I do know that God always shows up. You know, I got my notes here, but I feel like I'm already full. I mean, listening to all your songs, I leaned over to Doug in one of the songs, and I said those good old traditional hymns that I was raised with. I was raised in a Lutheran church, and one of the first influential figures of my life was Phil's mom and dad. I met them when I was probably 12 or 13 years old, and I had no idea that we were coming today to see Phil and Faye. My heart is just so overwhelmed and so blessed. I'm trying not to over-talk to what Doug had talked, but you know, we've been asked to share our story with you, but I've got to say, this is not our story. This is God's story. This is what God is writing on our hearts. And, you know, looking at all of you out here, I would much rather be sitting at your feet listening to what God's doing in your life, because you've got some wisdom in this room. I just know it. So anything that I say is just going to be, I guess, I don't know if it's extra. I don't know where to qualify myself in this room here with you. You know, I tried to, we've given our hearts to God way back in, we were saved in 1983. And ever since then, you know, we've tried to live a life worthy of the calling to which we've been called. And no, we're not perfect. We've made a lot of mistakes along the way. You know, but we've had struggles, we've had challenges, but as Doug says, you know, that's just kind of how life is. Today, I don't want you walking away from here thinking, man, that was a great couple. I got a lot out of their speech. If you say that, I'm going to be a little disappointed, but I really hope that you can see through what we're saying, and I hope you can see our hearts and see what the story God is writing on our hearts. And, you know, we're not special. We're no different than you. God is writing on your heart if you'll let him. You know, and that's the main thing, is you gotta take that step forward and let God, turn your life over to God and say, okay, God, I can't do this. I can't go through these struggles on my own. And, you know, and it takes a long time sometimes to get that from your head, because in 1983, I mentally did that. I said, Jesus, I want you to come into my heart. I want you to take over my life in 1983. But it wasn't until this injury that I was touched in my heart. I always knew God was real. Raised with those Bible stories, I knew God's real. Of course he's real. I mean, you'd have to be a dope to know that all this stuff could just happen on its own. I knew God was real, but I didn't feel, I didn't have that relationship with him. Sure, I studied my Bible every day. I read about him. I knew who God was. I knew what he expected. I knew those things. But it wasn't until Doug was deployed that I really wanted a relationship with my Lord. Because now Doug was gone out of the house. You know, I had extra time. I didn't have to take care of. So what if supper wasn't at 6? So what if things didn't get done? So what? Because Doug wasn't there. You know, I had more time, and what if I was married to God? What if I had God as my husband, and I treated God the way I would like to treat Doug or be treated? And so this injury, I kind of like to say this injury is all my fault. You can just go ahead and blame me, because I asked God in in January, you know, God, I really want a relationship with you. I want to know you're real. I want to hear your voice. I want to know beyond a shadow of a doubt that you are real in my life, and I need that. That was in January. You can go ahead and flip up the photo, please, if you haven't done that. We brought some photos along for you so you can get a better idea, because this injury's happened a little bit ago. You know, and you may scratch your heads and be thinking, oh, great, what am I got to do? What do I have in common with this homeschooling mother of 7 kids? You know, well, I think we've kind of already talked a little bit about that. We all have struggles. We all have obstacles, whether it's potty training or completing a daily task list on your day can be a challenge. None of us have a perfect start to our day. Maybe it's a sick child getting up before school, or maybe you're running late for work and you spill that coffee in your lap, or like Doug touched upon, maybe you've got road rage and you want to tell somebody you're number
three.
You know? We all have a choice in our day. We all have a choice how we're going to handle those challenges. Now, Doug and I, at the time of this picture, this was deployment day, and you will notice, yes, there's only 6 kids. Our oldest at that time was living in Missouri. She was out of the house. We were not strangers to challenges. At this time, we've been married for 27 years. We've got 7 kids and only 1 income. Big challenge. We've had our bank account levied, wages garnished, a child was diagnosed with possible cancer, along with all of the other daily life struggles of being married and raising kids. So yeah, we had our share of challenges before this main one. Next slide. And yeah, this was a struggle. This is actually Doug on the top of that Humvee with Ty Henry laying on top of him. You know, you've heard a little bit from Doug what happened, and they had to drive this way for 6 miles from the little town of Poli Cymru to the FAST team. Was a 6-mile jaunt that they were under fire the whole time. When Ty got off of that Humvee, he had bullet holes in his helmet and bullet holes in his vest. At any time, neither one of them could have been saved, but God was winning. You know, nothing. Doug did not see this RPG coming. Nobody on the team saw this. They just knew they're under fire, man. They're under a struggle. They're under attack. Nobody saw it coming. But you know what? God did. God saw it coming. God allowed it to happen. And some of you may say, well, that's not a good thing to say. How could my God allow such a horrible thing to happen? Well, hang in there. I'll tell you. You know, it wasn't our decision if Doug lived or died. That was God's decision. There was nothing we could do about this. Next photo. Doug was injured on a Sunday. I was notified on a Monday morning with little to no details. All I knew was he had been hit and he's alive. And I had hope because I felt that if God felt he had completed his earthly mission, God would have taken him right then and there. But he was alive, so I had hope that God still had a plan for us. By Tuesday, Doug arrived in Germany, and the doctor gave me a list of the injuries and told me he didn't know where Doug was going to be going, but he needs to get out of Germany as soon as possible. They didn't have the level of care in Germany that Doug needed, but I had questions. I'm a woman. I have questions. And after a few futile attempts, the doctor just couldn't get me to understand until he said, look, lady, your husband's not going to make it till Friday. He's got to go anywhere, and I don't care. He's just leaving. And hung up the phone. And I'm like, okay, this could be interesting. By Wednesday, Doug arrived at Brooke Army Medical Center in San Antonio, Texas. They assessed Doug's injuries, and the list was quite lengthy, as you can imagine. The high points were his right hand was being held together with pins and screws and a brace, and that was done at the FAST hospital that you see there, which is basically some tents that Doug helped put together 2 weeks before. He lost lower and upper jaw bone and tissue extending down to the vasculature of his neck. He had no floor of his mouth, which I know is very hard to even comprehend, but his saliva was just draining into his chest cavity. There was nothing there to catch it. His nose was broken lengthwise this way, and his palate, the roof of his mouth, was shattered like a china plate. He had two orbital blowouts, which is normal, I'm told, for a high-velocity impact, but the pressure behind his eyes could leave him blind. We just didn't know. He had blood coming out of both ears and eyes. His nose, even his sinuses were blown open. And I know some of these is just, we can't even imagine how can a person survive something like this. The RPG had taken off basically the right side of his face. Everything was either shifted or it was missing. There were so many broken bones and fractures that even the structure of his face was different at first.
I guess you could say I finally used my head.
That he did, because when that RPG hit, it bounced off of him, but it did land in the trees behind him, and it did detonate. So it was a live round. And then TBI, I'd never even heard of a TBI. That's a traumatic brain injury. He had a brain bleed, complete with cranial pressure, which led to traumatic amnesia. We had no idea how this was going to affect his brain. Next slide. But again, he was alive, and I had hope. I had faith in that God was going to keep him alive this long. It had to be for a reason, and it was up to us. I had to just have faith and keep moving. The doctor in Texas was quite patient with me over the phone, and he kept telling me to just get your affairs in order. You're going to be coming to Texas for a long time, whatever that meant. Doctors sometimes can be vague because they don't want to put you in a box, and I get that. So I left for Texas on a Monday, which was a week after I was notified. I will never forget our son Caleb, who was 13 at the time. As I walked out the door, he stood at the door with tears in his eyes, and he said, "Mom, when can we come see Dad?" And I said, "Honey, I don't know. All I know is we got to take the first 30 days, and I'll call you, and I'll let you know. We'll keep in touch. We'll be okay." My heart was breaking because here, as a mom of seven, I had never left my kids longer than a week at a time. And here I am. I just said 30 days. You think that was a little struggle? A little challenge? Just a little one. So once I arrived in Texas, Doug became more agitated, and he was unable to be restrained. The usual sedation drugs were not working because he had such a severe brain injury. After seeing his injuries and just seeing how close to death I was convinced, because I would be there for when they would change his dressings. And the first day that I was able to be there to see when they took the gauze off, I began asking questions, because once again, I'm a woman. I have many questions. And I asked the nurse, I said, "Okay, what is this? What is that?" "Well, that's part of his tongue that you can see. And what is this thing that's pulsing?" "Oh, that's the blood flow. That is, if that would have been severed, it would have been all over, and he wouldn't even be here." And you could see it. It was right in front of my eyes, and that's when I just began to get so excited. I started laughing, I started clapping, and I think this poor nurse, he probably thought, "Oh my gosh, she's having a breakdown." But I knew, thank you, God, I know you have a purpose for Doug's life. I don't understand it, but I don't have to. Thank you, God. We're going to be in this. So at that time, we had four kids still living at home, and I didn't want their day to be consumed with hospital stays and events that happened there. So I was being kept busy enough at the hospital just on my own. I was running from here to there to everywhere. And I wouldn't have time to take care of the kids or do their homeschool because Doug needed me right now. So after talking with the kids and Doug's brother, Rob, and his wife, Sheila, it was decided that our kids would stay with them for the summer. Obstacles are opportunities. Next slide, please. But you know what? The National Guard, they became my new family. The chain of command pledged their undying support for us, and the support was absolutely unbelievable and genuine. From the time Doug arrived at Fort Sam Houston, an Ohio Guard member was by his side. General Smith, arrived in Texas a week after I arrived to award Doug his Purple Heart, and that was Purple Heart Day. General Smith, he didn't want me or Doug to feel completely alone. He arranged to have a service member with me for what ended up to be 12 weeks. Whatever I needed, wherever I needed to go, I had someone who knew Doug before the injury, someone who was my sounding board, who would listen to my complaining, and I could ask, what do you think Doug would want? Next photo. So for 55 days, Doug was like a three-year-old. He was not content to lay in a bed. He was up walking and moving and trying to talk. He was getting into things. He would take out his trach and hand it to you like it was just something special. And we're like, oh no, not again. We got to put this in. Doug could not communicate with anybody. He just looked adorable, but got into so much trouble. So I am so thankful I was there to communicate what I knew he would want. Next photo. The staff began to advise me to think about home health care, since Doug may never be the same. In fact, they said, he's never going to be the husband that you remember. He is always going to be different. And so we found a brain rehab center in Austin, Texas, which was an hour away from the base. I had heard so much wonderful things coming out of this rehab center, but once I went to visit them, I was not impressed, and I just felt really hopeless. This whole process was emotionally draining, and it was not easy. I began to doubt if I really was doing the right thing by transferring him to this brain center. And what even is the right thing at this point? You know, in the beginning, when I was first notified that Doug was injured, I thought I heard God tell my heart that things were going to be okay, but just follow me, follow God. But you know, this is not looking okay. The doctors are saying some pretty awful things, and it was just not looking good. Jeremiah 29, verse 13 says, you will seek me and you will find me when you seek with me with all of your heart. And boy, was I seeking. I was crying out to God every minute of every day. Tell me what the right thing is, Lord. I don't know what to do. I was searching, and I was at my lowest point, mentally, physically, and emotionally. So it was a Sunday evening, the end of May. Notice in the picture, Doug has these little mitts on. And this picture here was with Nelson, which Doug and Nelson were very close, and this was the day before. This was a Saturday, on a Sunday evening, the end of May. You know, the family that I had brought out was now gone. Nelson, he went back because the service members would go out back to the home in Ohio on a Sunday, and then a Monday, another one would come in. So I had a transition, you know, of a day of being on my own. So this was 7 weeks after being hit. 7 weeks of constant thinking, decision-making, and I was only sleeping 4 hours a day, if that. Doug and I, that day, were outside walking along with the nurse because if we kept Doug busy, he would not pull out his trach or his catheter and do the things that a three-year-old would want to do. So we kept him busy. We kept him moving. We were walking the parking lot, and because it was a Memorial Day weekend, it was a skeleton crew at the hospital, which means this parking lot, we were at the back of the building, and there was no cars at all that normally would be full. And it was a long driveway in, one way in, one way out. And so Doug is still wearing his mittens on this holiday, and we're walking. The nurse and him and me, we're all walking, trying to keep him busy, when suddenly he just starts the fidgeting thing again. And he starts pushing me away, and he's looking at me really mad and just pushing me away. And I'd had it. I just stood there, and I watched him walk on. And I felt very desperate, alone, and wondering, where is this all going to go, God? Where am I going to do? Just tell me, what is the right thing? When all of a sudden, somebody came up behind me and they grabbed me by the shoulders. I went to turn around, and I could not move. I mean, I was in a grip of vice, but I did not feel afraid. I didn't feel threatened. And as I struggled to kind of turn around, this wonderful voice said, "It don't matter what I look like. You don't know me anyway, but God knows you, and he sent me to tell you, you are doing the right thing. Just keep going." I was at the Pentagon that day, and I watched many wives walk away from their husbands. "You stay with him because he needs you." And of course, by that time, I'm a blubbering fool. I am crying. And the hands let go, the person turns around, and I turn around to see who is this person that's telling me these things. And I couldn't tell. I was crying so hard. All I saw was a person get in the back of a car, a black sedan. And by this time, the nurse had come over. She saw someone talking to me, and so she came over, and all she said was, "By the looks of it, you must have gotten an answer to prayer." And I said, "I think so." We were just both, we just looked at each other. And when we turned around to look at the driveway, it's like, where's the car? There was no car. But she saw the car. She saw the person get in the car. But neither one of us saw the car drive away. So, was it a special visitor? I believe so. I believe God answered my prayers in the only way that he knew I needed. And why? I don't know. And I can't ask why, because our God knows us better than we know ourselves. But he knew that I needed to hear that. So anyway, Doug got transferred to the brain rehab center. And after a few days, he woke up. He was supposed to be there for 6 weeks. I'm sorry, 6 months, but it turned into only 6 weeks. He had to relearn everything because he had no lips, and so he had to learn how to talk. He could not use his hands, so we had to do things for him. But they discharged him from the brain rehab center, and we lived back to Fort Sam Houston in a Fisher house. You know, and that's when I realized the real challenges were going to begin, because when the RPG hit Doug, yeah, it took out some facial things, which it didn't bother me, so what? But, you know, he suffered the catastrophic blow not only to his body, but to his ego and his brain. He wondered if he let the team down. What did he do? Did he do something that he got hit? He wondered if I would want to stay with him looking the way he looks now. He referred to us as the beauty and the beast. So, as you can imagine, this warrior of a man was very hard on himself. He asked if he wanted me, or if I wanted him, to go stand out on the railroad tracks in the middle of the night. He made life so difficult for me, and he kept pushing me away. Here was the man that I loved for 27 years, and I knew better than he knew himself, and now he didn't want me to stay with him. Was that an obstacle or an opportunity, do you think? But you know what? I wasn't quitting. Now I understood why I was told to stay with him, that he needed me. Next slide, please. By August now, this is August, the omelet team was heading home, and Doug wanted to go home. But I said, "No, we have to stay here. We can't go home. We've got surgeries. We've got to rebuild things." But we talked to the team of doctors, and they said, "I think it would be good healing for Doug to be back home for a little bit to see his team." So, and that was the first time that Doug got to hear firsthand what happened, because like he said, he doesn't remember anything about the incident. He doesn't, and so all he knows is what his team members have told him, and he's had to memorize that. So he doesn't, this to him is just another story. He doesn't really have much personal connection to it other than looking in the mirror every day and feeling the hair that's from his leg in his mouth. You know, but anyway, you know, how do you get a patient that still has a catheter and a peg tube and a trach and not able to eat food? How do you get them home from Texas to Ohio for just such a short amount of time? Well, once again, the unbelievable happened. The general made arrangements for to send his plane, not only the plane, but a whole team of nurses and staff to help us get home to Ohio for Doug's welcome home ceremony. And you see there, Ty Henry and Matt France. Ty was the medic on top of Doug, and Matt France was the one that the helmet was right beside Doug. So now, after the welcome home ceremony, it's September, 6 months after Doug was injured. We moved the four kids that were living back home. We moved them out to Texas to live with us because Doug said, I need the family. We need to be together. And so we moved to an on-base hotel that ended up being our home for over a year. So we had six people, one dog, medical equipment out the kazoo in one hotel room. You think that's a struggle? The prognosis from the doctors was not the continued with many uncertainties. They kept saying, well, we don't expect this to happen, but the whole time Doug just proved them wrong. You know, he has no sensation on the right side of his jaw. He has no taste or smell. So the surgeons didn't feel that it was important for him to have teeth. But, you know, we helped Doug and I together. We convinced the doctors that, hey, Doug needed to get back to a normal life as possible. And so what they ended up doing is they replaced his jawbone with his fibula and the skin that goes around that, and they molded it to the titanium metal. So now he does have leg hair that grows inside of his mouth. So, only he was hoping that they would have taken some from his behind, so that way I'd have to, when I kissed his cheek, he could always say, she's kissing my butt. But anyway.
Say it's not so.
I told you we weren't professional, okay? Doug endured countless hours of therapy and surgeries, and I finally convinced him that I was going to be in this for the long haul, and I was not going anywhere. You can't get rid of me that easy, bubs. I was there to change dressings, clean his trach, and feed him through his peg tube because it'd be over a year before he would actually be able to eat food through his mouth. Next slide, please. In 2011, we finally were released from Texas, and we were able to come home to Ohio. And this particular picture was Doug had his last surgery at Ohio State University. And it was so much easier to have these surgeries at home with family around. In 2013, next slide, please. In 2013, Doug retired from the Army. At our retirement ceremony, General Harris looked at Doug and said, you may be retiring this uniform, but if I know you, the next time I see you, you're still going to be in a uniform. And, you know, for me, that was so powerful when he said that, because he was, in essence, saying, I believe in you guys. And this was at a time when we really needed somebody to believe in us. We were adjusting to a new life at home, and what does that look like? And you think you're going to step into a life that you always had, but after a traumatic injury or even an illness, a life-threatening illness, things just are different when you try to resume your normal life. You're not the same person you once was. So we were adjusting to a new life where everything seemed different. Doug was relieved of his position as fire chief in our small town. The military job that Doug held for 30 years, he's retiring from. I didn't know how much retirement pay is going to cost. Are we going to be able to keep the house? Are we still have kids living at home? How is this all going to work out? And on the outside, I knew God was going to take care of us. I just knew. God has never let us hung out to dry before. In my head, I knew that. But you'd think after all of this, you'd think I would have had it in my heart. But I was still scared. I felt abandoned and alone once again. But you know, General Harris gave us those words when at a time when we really needed it. And you know, it was a small comment to him that I don't even think he really remembers that he made. But to me, it was something that I would go back to again and again. And so I would encourage you, if you ever feel led to say something, even if you're in the grocery store in the aisle of canned spinach and you feel the need to say something, you need to say it, because you do not know what impact that's going to have on that person, that they, you might be the only person to deliver those encouraging words. You know, it's been 10 years since the injury. The feeding tube and trach tubes, everything's gone, surgeries are complete. This is as handsome as Doug gets. And I think that is pretty doggone handsome, if you ask me. Doug is fully independent. I don't have to be there to talk for him, even though he does point to me an awful lot and say, tell him. So I still do that. Doug is truly a miracle and an answer to many prayers that were sent to the throne room of heaven that day. Since his injuries, Doug has earned his bachelor's degree in fire science. He has passed numerous certifications as an EMT. Doug has taught at Hocking College and completed a police academy course. Doug is currently a police officer with the Wellston Fire Department. Next slide. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, the Wellston Police Department. Yeah, you just did a fire thing there. General Harris was right. Doug is still in a uniform. And don't let anyone tell you you can't. Or don't let them try to put you in a box because it's never been done before. If it's never been done before, you don't know until you try. And I am so thankful that we just allowed Doug to be Doug. Well, when we moved back home to Ohio, 18 months after injury, I was thinking, wow, we have made it, man, life. It's going to be easy sailing, easy breezy. You know, we lived through the worst obstacle ever. Everything's going to be a piece of cake after this, you know. But something I found out, obstacles and challenges never stop. Just because you live through one challenging obstacle, that doesn't mean that that's the end. Life is always changing. The only thing constant is change. And there are lots and lots of obstacles. In 2011, while we were living in Texas, our home was broken into and lived in by drug dealers. They sold all of our things to buy more drugs. One of our daughters during that time while we were gone, she suffered a sexual assault. In 2012, Doug was relieved of his position as fire chief in our small town with no explanation. This was his dream job, and it was the only reason, really, that he was working so hard to get better. In 2013, Jennifer, our second grandbaby, died at 3 months of age. In 2014, Doug ran for mayor of our town, thinking, well, maybe this is what God wanted him to do, to change the system. But he wasn't elected. From 2015 to 2019, we fought a court battle to get Doug's job back, but we couldn't. We ended up taking a settlement. In 2019, one of our daughter-in-laws was diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumor. I'm sorry, we don't know how long you have to live, but you'll just have to live with it. Do we understand these obstacles or opportunities? Do we like them? No. But I've learned that we always will have obstacles because we live in an imperfect world, and we cannot control these obstacles, but we can control how we react to them. Will these obstacles make us bitter, or will they make us better? And by that, let me show you what the difference is. Yeah, well, I just listed all the bad things that we went through, but yet there are so many good things. If this injury didn't happen, we wouldn't be here speaking with you. That rocket would have landed in that Humvee where all the other guys were. They could have been killed if Doug hadn't been the one to use his head and catch it. You know, while living at Fort Sam, our kids got to see much more horrific injuries. You think Doug's injury is horrific? You have no idea what we saw in Fort Sam Houston, the damage that can be done, but yet the strong perseverance of human strength to overcome is absolutely incredible, and our kids saw that. In 2011, Glenn McIntyre of WBNS Channel 10 interviewed us for a story. And that was a 15-minute story that is now on YouTube, and it has been all across the world. And I have received notes from people in Africa saying, thank you for telling your story. You have touched my heart. You know, and if this injury wouldn't have happened, I would have never got the sweetest gift of all, the gift of God coming personally, the creator of the universe, the person who is in charge of every little thing, loving me and knowing me, that I needed to hear some reassurance from him. He stopped everything just for me. I would have never had that had Doug not been injured. So yeah, I take full blame. This injury is all my fault, but it's a good thing, and Doug's been paid the price for it. You know, God is still writing our story. And who knows what's coming down the road? We're living in unusual times, and a lot of people are scared. But you know, we don't have to live in fear. God has everything under control, and you are right where God needs you to be right now. No matter how bad your circumstances are, you are right where God wants you right this minute, because he sees you. He will make good what Satan has planned for evil. In Romans chapter 8, 28 says, and we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. Have you been called? Have you asked to be called? Someone once told me that God is a gentleman and he will not just barge in. He waits for you to ask. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 says, verse 11 says, therefore encourage one another and build each other up, just as in fact you are doing. We need to encourage one another. We need to build up hope. Lord knows there's so much negative going on in the world today. We cannot look at that negative. We have to look at the positive. We have to build up hope. And how can we do that if we ourselves are not hopeful? We've got to get right with God. We've got to let him control our life. We've got to ask him into our hearts and say, take control, because I can't do this. There is no way Doug or I could have ever done any of these things that I've listed to you on our own. It was all 100% God. Philippians chapter 4, verse 8 says, finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, and if there be any praise, think on these things. That is what God has told us to do. Think on good things. Think the positive. We choose to look for the positive because it means life and health. And yeah, you do have a choice. Maybe you're sitting there today thinking, well, she doesn't know my story. She doesn't know what I've done. She doesn't know where I've been. Let me tell you, God knows where you've been. God knows your story, and he wants you to look at the positive, and all it takes is a flip of the switch. Yeah, it's easier to be positive than it is negative, and it's much more fun, but let me show you something real quick, and then I'll wrap this up. You know, Doug, you've heard his story. Doug doesn't have feeling on the right side of his mouth. He doesn't eat like you or I eat. Even the little communion cup, he was afraid of wearing it all down his shirt, because when he drinks, things just kind of fall back out. Even though he's had a wonderful, wonderful surgeon restore, there's just nothing can remake what God has made in the first place. You know, everything tastes the same. It doesn't matter what I make. It's just all, he has no taste. He can't smell or taste. You know, when you come home at night, or when you walk into maybe the mall and you smell the cinnamon rolls or the chocolate chip cookies. No, Doug doesn't smell that anymore. He can't smell if I have a Scentsy candle burner or anything. He's just, okay, whatever. You know, he doesn't enjoy his favorite dish anymore, whatever that was. It's Doug is not able to enjoy ice cream or soup. He doesn't drink out of a cup anymore. He can't slurp his coffee in the morning like I do. You know, so how's that make you feel? I can tell by the looks of it, you are looking pretty doggone sad, you know? But now, what if I were to say this? What if I were to say, Doug can't smell or taste? Yeah. So he doesn't care if I burn the toast and I scrape off the burnt stuff anymore and hand it to him. Good morning, dear. He doesn't care. He doesn't care if I put too much salt in the casserole. And I'm like, oh, this is awful. He's like, oh, it tastes great, dear. Well, not taste. He'll say, it has a great texture. He doesn't have to eat salads, you know. He can say, no, it just falls out. I can prepare the same meal 2 days in a row, and he won't know the difference. Taste-wise, visually, he'll say, did we just have this? I said, yeah, but it all tastes the same. I can paint my nails in the car now while we're going places, and I don't have to hear him say, ooh, that stinks, you know? And most importantly, when we go to walk the dog, he gets to pick up the poop because he can't smell. What a job.
The texture's not that nice, though.
That's true. That's true. Now look at you guys. You are laughing. So what changed? Did Doug miraculously get his smell and his taste back? No. The facts are still the same. So why were you sad a minute ago? But now suddenly, it's all happy. It's because of your perspective. You chose to look on the positive side. You didn't dwell on that negative. Oh, it's raining today. Hey, it's a great day for ducks. We can't help anybody by being negative. So, in fact, the enemy, he wants to destroy us. And if we're disheartened, we give up hope. And if we lose hope, we can't help anybody else. Next slide. Well, our seven kids are all now grown. Our seven kids have now turned into 14 plus. Their ages range from the oldest at 36 to the youngest at 22. Yeah, seven kids in 14 years. Uh-huh, you're doing the math. Yep. I told you we were busy. And now we have five grandkids and two more on the way. And you may be wondering, what good can come from losing a baby at 3 months old? Or having an inoperable brain tumor? Well, you know, I don't have all the answers. I don't know. But in our situation, that three-month-old little baby, she saved our daughter's life. Because our daughter was not in a good relationship. And God bless my daughter. She is very loyal. She would have stayed in that relationship. But because that baby sacrificed her own life, our daughter is now on a much better path of life and is where God needs her to be. And the brain tumor, the daughter-in-law with the brain tumor, you know, she and our son, they live a life that is just absolutely beautiful. She is a nurse. She goes to work every day. He is a security guard. They love life. They have an appreciation. They know the risks, but they also they're not willing to let those risks hold them back. They know that God's got them and that they're just going to do whatever God wants them to do. And God bless her, she wanted to go skydiving with Doug a couple of weeks ago when Doug went. So, you know, I am in awe of our seven kids and their spouses. I am just in awe that God loaned them to us. They're not really our kids. They're God's kids. And I just tried to do the best I could. You know, life can be great after a life-altering situation, no matter what it is you're going through. You have the power to choose how you're going to react to it. Are you going to try to do it all by yourself? Or are you going to let go and let God? You know, it's all up to you. And with that, I have spoke way too long, and I'm going to hand it back to my husband and my hero who doesn't think he's a husband or think he's a hero.
I think I'm your husband.
My dog, yeah.
All I got to do is look at that finger with the ring on it. It's all good. I'm going to wrap real quickly. A lot of people want to know, how it is not having taste or smell or whatever. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. I think Jenna did a great job of explaining that. But I know I'm going to get it back. In fact, I have faith that I'm going to get it back. Hebrews 11:1 says, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. So I have the hope that I'm getting it back. I know I'm going to get it back. The nerves are there. They're just not connected right now. They'll grow back. That's what they do. May take a bit, but that's okay. In the meantime, I'll keep picking up dog waste and enjoying the texture of my food. In the end, not the end yet, during the course of this, I quit counting at 30 surgeries. I don't know how many it was, 32, 34, whatever. And a lot of people have come to me and said, that's a lot of suffering. I mean, you've suffered a bunch. I'm going to count it with God's word because that's the way we should do things. In the book of Romans chapter 5, verses 3 through 5, it says, we rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope. And hope does not disappoint because God's love has been poured into our hearts through the Holy Spirit, who's been given to us, a free gift. So, things are going to be okay. And if you do have a challenge going on, and that's kind of our message today, if you have a big challenge, little challenge, whatever it happens to be an overcomer. I asked John to, as we wrap up, as I shut up, I should say, that I asked him to play a song. We listen to a lot of time, most times. We can't listen to K-Love Radio. We listen to, the Sirius XM has a channel where they play music that praises God. And I asked John one of the songs that's touched me. And it fits into the theme of our request for you today. If you have a challenge, see some younger folk back here, it might be getting your driver's license. You may already have them. You may be trying to get it yet. Whatever that challenge is, it's just a little obstacle. So be an overcomer. Please. You'll feel better when you overcome. Everybody around you will feel better when you overcome. I've been a booger bear. I know it. So I'm told. I don't remember it. But just if you have a little challenge, do your best to overcome it and keep moving forward. Because that's what this is all about in life. We move forward to the end goal, and that's to be with Jesus. Thank you. We appreciate your time. We appreciate you inviting us up here to be with you. And I'm very happy I got to make it. I can't count quickly, but that's all right. At least 30 new friends. It might be like 50. I can't say it. But thank you. We appreciate all of you being here today. And God bless you all. Thank you.